everyone. It's a new Papa's Basement. That's our new intro. I sound like Dino. I'm John Papa Giorgio.
Wait, does this mean you're going to stop talking about the Israeli invasion of Lebanon having to do with Armenian diamond trade? Because if you would stop that, I would really appreciate it.
All I can say is long overdue. They need to invade more countries.
That's a different podcast.
Yeah. You know what? They need to F up Chile. That's what I say. I think the United States
helping to assassinate the democratically elected leader of Chile, the United States has that under control. No other countries need to bother with Chile right now.
Did we do that?
Yeah. Salvador Allende, back in the 70s. Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. Proactive.
That's right.
Go out there.
The CIA. Yeah,
Sean has a shirt that says Allende, which
right.
I told him I find offensive personally, but he says it fits so well. It's
right.
Flattering. So.
Allende. Allende. Because I have a speech impediment. I couldn't say Allende. Jesus Christ.
Oh. Wow. I was not trying to make a stuttering joke. Sean went there immediately.
Oh, I didn't know that was a catch up for you. No. Like, so do you
walk
over? You
can talk if you want, or Sean and I can just go.
No. I'm saying, I can now picture Sean walking over to a chick. He's like, sorry, I couldn't help but notice you. I fuck me.
Yeah, because that goes over well. Or it went over well.
You know who really appreciates that? His wife and co-founder co-director of the brick and mortar improv theater, Unified Scene Theater.
Thank you for getting that.
Let's do our intro super fast.
All right.
It's Papa's Basement. I'm John Papa Giorgio, hence the show's weird name. We got Sean Westfall of Unified Scene Theater, a man I'd like to co-host so many episodes, and he's really busy toppling dictatorships.
Right. I end it.
You know what I love is the look on people's faces as they watch the host just about start their bio, as they wonder, what are they going to say about me?
Yeah.
What are you going to say about Dust, Papa?
Well, no, I like your calm, cool action hero line as you packed the rifle to assassinate him. You went, I end you.
Look, let's leave my background as a CIA hitman out of this podcast. All right?
First of all, much like the gig economy, Sean likes to subcontract out his wet work.
That's right.
He was ahead of his time.
Introduce Dust, for God's sake.
All right, we got Brian Dust. Brian Dust is very talented and very Christian. And that's he's
not just
very
Christian,
tall,
very,
very
Christian.
Yeah,
that's
yes. Right. That's right. I on the other hand, watched Sabrina's Chilling Adventures on Netflix, and I was like, not nearly satanic enough.
That's right.
On a scale of one to Yahweh, how religious is Brian?
So, yeah, you guys all know Sean. I've done some video work recently with Brian. Brian's a funny guy. Sean fears intimacy with me. He was like, look, I'll never do a pod alone with you again. So get some third in here.
I'd like to introduce Chaperone and Funny Christian.
That's
Brian
right.
P. Dust.
Brian P. Dust. And wait, so what? You have a production company. What's the name of your production company?
Sassy Pirate Industries.
I keep wanting to call it Smutty Pirate. I don't know why I'm going to call it Smutty Pirate, but it's Sassy
we
Pirate
We like to
industry.
Break pirate stereotypes. Pirates are oftentimes people of faith, too.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they can all be swashbuckling.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
Are we talking like the eye patch pirates, or they're like, look at me pirates?
Wow. Right to the stereotype.
That's right.
not every pirate worked in
that movie was based on a true story.
Not
Don't
every
make me
pirate
look like
worked
ass.
In a machine shop without protective eyewear before hitting the seven seas. You know? A little light pillaging.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Just wearing like squash goggles.
Yes.
Yeah, like,
and tiny little shorts.
I value me peepers.
Safety first.
Arr. People, visit your optometrist at least once a year to make sure that you're...
Yes. Before hitting a town and raping it. Bar boys, you got your prophylactics.
Forget scurvy. Glaucoma is the silent killer.
Which leads us to our sponsor.
Yeah. Limes.
Eyes, guys.
All right, so we're going to do the show. That was the show. We're done.
Yeah, we're done.
Wow, he's such a good host. He actually removed a hoodie and seamlessly transitioned into the show.
Yeah.
In one fell swoop.
I took off my outer larval Bill Belichick layer, and now I've just got my T-shirt, which shows both a childish design and my man bosoms.
Yep.
And was purchased for $3.99 on sale at an Old Navy that I didn't even walk into to buy clothing. I just did work for them Lockwise, saw a discount rack of t-shirts and went, you know what? You're getting 15 out of me again today. And that was it. And that was a new wardrobe for the last 5 years.
I love a good impulse buy.
That's right.
Yeah. So we wanted to discuss, God, what do I have written down? You know what? We've got that Catholic, the smug Catholic lad.
Yeah.
Story.
Yeah.
Sean's not feeling that.
Not feeling that.
We already covered, I don't know, geopolitics. We've already touched on the Middle
East
and Latin America.
That is the name of this podcast. So there's never enough
geopolitics. Are us.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I've got a funny, decent story from work. People seem to like my work stories. It's a brief one. And we have True Detective Season 3.
I've never seen it.
All right. You guys are
hobbling me. Is
this
All Things Considered or Papa's Basement?
Well, fine. You know what? Let's talk about, I was reading something recently that got my attention, and I know it'll pique Sean's attention, too, because it's about man on bear erotica. No. And, Dust, you will like this as well. I read an article that was explaining the Upright Citizens Brigade, I think, considered by a lot of people to be one of the premier improv theater systems in the country. The whole claim to fame of this place, they teach improv, much like Second City did a little more, what, during the 70s, you would say, and 80s.
Yeah.
They've
Although, I mean, to differentiate UCB from Second City, Second City used improv as a way to discover premises for sketches and discover characters who might fit into a sketch. That was always the big sort of sticking point between Bernie Solins, who was the creative director of Second City, and Del Close, which was Bernie Solins would say, improv is a tool for discovering comic premises, and Del would say, nope, improv is a thing unto itself. It's an art form. So that's sort of like, even though Second City has a reputation of being an improv theater, they're primarily a sketch and comedy review theater.
And, of course, inspiring Del's famous catchphrase, Solins, you stupid cunt.
Yeah, that's everyone's, there's t-shirts that have
really,
that, right?
Right. Really out of right, way right, of words, right. That Del.
Yeah.
The point being, UCB has really advertised itself as a bit of a beacon. Like, if you simply want to pay money and go to a funny school and then have your career launched, UCB has kind of said that's what we are, right? Or,
yeah, I mean, let's face it, in the aughts, the double zeros, that's where a lot of people trained, a lot of people came from. And, you know, the list of people who started out there back when improv wasn't even sort of the household name it is, and have catapulted themselves or found a platform from which to catapult themselves into the upper echelons of entertainment is, it's amazing. I mean, it's the list of people, it's household names these days. So
it's much like the great hi-li craze of the 1930s. It came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Nobody saw it.
You had a few stars. Those stars, I mean, they were much like Groundlings, Second City, and UCB. There were three main schools
of hi-li.
Of hi-li. Okay. And everyone was like, I want to take hi-li. I'm real good at throwing stuff in baskets. And then there were so many hi-li players, but there were not enough hi-li courts.
Yeah.
They're enormous.
Right.
Also, you know what helped happen? The opening of the Miami Vice credits.
Yeah. Do, 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 do,
right?
Do, do, do.
Yeah, those hi-li things are like, that looks fun and dangerous.
Right.
Let me sign up. And then there was a glut of hi-li players with nowhere to play. I think that's, you know, if one could pick a metaphor for improv schools, that would probably be the best one.
Yeah, that's right. I would go straight to hi-li myself.
I've known Brian for like 2 years now. He never has failed to make a hi-li metaphor that lands just dead on. I mean, it's on the tip of his tongue, but damn if he doesn't make it work. UCB's huge thing, you pay a lot compared to any other place I know of. You're paying $450 per class for a four-class minimum curriculum.
Right.
They then get you in, once you've completed their 401, to do all sorts of grad work. The thought being, eventually you're going to land on a stage with us.
Right.
And someday someone might notice you.
Or at the very least, you might build a network that, you know, from which you find a comedy community, a group of fellow like-minded comedy creatives, for want of a better word, and go it that way. I mean, like, for instance, Abby and Alana of Broad City never made a house team at UCB. And so they said, well, screw it. Let's just start doing our own shit. So they started back when YouTube was one. Remember back when YouTube was a platform where you could actually launch something? They created their own web series, and it got a lot of attention. And that's where Amy Poehler got interested and started producing it. So, yeah.
They did a web series, and then she ended up, I think she was in the season finale, and yeah. That sort of helped ratchet it up.
Yeah.
So even though they didn't make a house team, that was a great way for people to develop talent. And I think that's a lot of
what was the name of that season finale again? High Lie, Bye Lie?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would have done a lot better.
If it had been, it would have been great.
It would have been on network television.
That's right.
It would have equaled or surpassed the MASH finale.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about plumbing and MASH finale? We talked about that last time.
Throw it in there.
The devastation, the havoc that was wreaked on the sewage system after the MASH finale in New York City. People were holding it so hard to watch the finale that they all ran to the bathroom and they all flushed toilets at the same time. What was the thing you're talking about? The power outage?
Oh, in England in the day, back when everyone was just watching like one network or whatever the fuck.
BBC One.
Just BBC One.
Right.
Literally every commercial break, their electrical grid was getting pummeled because people were plugging in electric kettles.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
wow,
because
wow.
They just chug tea. Right. That's the thing. Tea and Mohawks and, I know British punks.
Right.
I'd like to spend the rest of this time hearing you talk about London, England.
London, England?
England.
Yeah. Well, the extent of what I know about London, England is an Uncle Alexander of mine, a Greek man, came back from London one time with a teddy bear with a Union Jack t-shirt on and a little mohawk.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I was like, so this is just what they do now. The palace guards have this underneath the bearskin hats.
That's right. We have to have something to market. Let's put it. Wait a minute. The teddy bear. And we have punks. A mohawk.
Flip it. Yeah. That's it. Just forget about the whole opium thing.
Right.
Tea slavery and whatever else.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, or carving up Africa.
Right.
Wrecking the Middle East.
India. Mirage.
I have a British friend who had said, told me, like, Brian, back in the day, the sun never set on the British Empire. Mm-hmm. And the actual answer is because, yeah, God doesn't trust the British in the dark. Moving along.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Your MASH anecdote, I'm sad because I forgot you qualified it as New York City. Like, I was picturing the entire Midwest holding in their horrific cheese dumps.
No. See, the Midwest wasn't as lefty as the people on the coasts were.
Oh, so they didn't like MASH?
Yeah.
And also now that we have adult diapers, I think the experience of a season finale would be very different.
Oh, it would just be like a horrible trash Monday
afterward.
These defiled diapers. That's so funny, though, the Midwest didn't get down with MASH.
Well, I mean, they did. I mean, they had national ratings, but I mean, like, they probably weren't as into it as people, you know.
Oh. Yeah. They were just, like, watching, this is pathetic, I'm forgetting, John Wayne's Green Berets.
Yeah, that's right. With Jim Hutton, the father of Timothy Hutton.
They were on repeat on Betamax.
That's right.
Just reel to reel, like
which,
the way he
listen,
was
which
film.
Was a superior format.
That's no
don't
argument.
Don't let me don't get started on VHS versus beta versus 1-inch video versus quad video.
Oh, yeah.
I will talk about that.
Just like
for
Crystal
hours.
Pepsi, the superior Pepsi.
Well, I mean, we all know why VHS won, right? Because Sony would not license beta, would not license manufacturers to manufacture Betamax. Machines.
Just like with Apple back in the day, wouldn't let people write programs and they took a huge dip and then somehow, you know, iPod and mock turtlenecks and here we are.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't forget the pancreatic cancer.
That's
how could we?
How could
we? How could we? It's literally written on the crocheted pillow that's on your lap.
That's right.
Yeah. When they talk about PC culture, it's not the left.
So UCB.
UCB. UCB pancreatic cancer, good night.
Right.
UCB charges you about $2,000, let's say, and then you're on top of that billed for God knows what. Sean, you said that they try at the very least to offer you a networking experience, but that's not really what they put in the big bright lights. What they say, what they're insinuating in essence, they have pictures all over the walls of the training center containing groups really of like famous dudes that took off. Like, you know, you'll be like, oh, like you walk to take a piss and you're like, oh, there's Andy Daly, like in his group, you know, and shit like that.
Right.
And
can an improv club really insinuate?
Yes. And
no, I mean, there's a certain amount where, there's a, I don't know. I guess I just don't know a lot of people who have gone through every single class at UCB and haven't enjoyed it or haven't gone on to other stuff. I think there's a certain amount where, me personally, like, I love taking improv classes. I've taken them at DC Improv and I've taken them at Unified Scene Theater, both with Sean. That's probably why I liked them. But there's a certain amount where, like, I don't think I'm not spending the money and the time thinking I'm going to get on a TV show guaranteed. A lot of it comes down to hustle of the individual. Right. So, like, with Broad City, they didn't get on a show, but that didn't mean they gave up and they didn't like the pipeline. They're like, they got involved, and when people meet, then you're like, oh, like, think about the other people that got that are on their show that are actually UCB folks, like,
well, first,
Tim Martin or others.
Let me smack your face so that you'll relinquish Sean's cock so I may place it in my mouth. Best teacher I've had by far, and that's part of why I'm not in love with my UCB experience so far. I've done, like, I'm halfway through their curriculum. I was about to do the 301. And the teachers I've had, not bad, but, like, fucking, you know, I've gone to a lot of other theaters for various little improv classes. It was about the same experience.
You.
I know. Fucking trolling. And, no, earlier I mentioned I was taking an improv class in Baltimore, and Sean was like, you cavalier whore. Like, really, like, just his eyes wide, like, ugh. I think when people go to UCB, given what you pay, it is more expensive than any other class that I know of, what they offer. There's just a touch of an expectation that, like, once I complete this, there's a chance I get to the big leagues. And personally, I feel, Sean.
Yeah, no, I was about to echo. That's in their marketing.
It, like, really is. Thank you.
And it's in UCB's marketing. It's in Second City's marketing. They're not going to they don't advertise take an improv class. They advertise take an improv class take a sketch class where Tina Fey studied, where Steve Carell studied, where Steve Colbert studied. And in fact, like, when UCB does their corporate offerings, they're basically doing the same thing. They're leaning heavily into that. And so, I'm sorry, when Second City does that, UCB does the same thing. They're always touting the people who have come through their system. Now, granted, you know, most people they're advertising came through their system 20 years ago when improv in New York City was this sort of hot new thing that nobody else was doing, and when improv was sort of in the nascent stages of overtaking the culture the way it had. So the bar to get in wasn't that high, and yet
the payoff was much higher.
Yeah, and the payoff was much higher. I mean, it's sort of like it's also timing, like any artistic movement.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to say, like, it's really difficult to say, I'm going to be a postmodernist New York painter. Well, the era of the postmodernist New York painters was, you know, and again, I know nothing about art, but approximately 25, 30 years ago. So you're a little late to the game, right, to call yourself that. And now I think people are running in the same situation where I think improv has sort of, the improv bubble has kind of burst, because if you know from UCB headlines, they're closing. They had two theaters in New York City, and they're closing one. They're closing the Beast.
Beast in the East.
Beast in the East. And they're limiting their opportunities at the new theater in Hell's Kitchen, which they moved to, what, about a year and a half ago after leaving the theater.
So they're paring down everything.
Paring down everything. Paring down teachers. Paring down coaching and things like that. So,
I was going to say, I think there's a couple of things. One, you do know a lot about art. There's an Andy Warhol photo with Keith Haring framed right over Papa's head.
And the big butt book.
People love talking about your big butt book.
Well, good.
Just to clarify, it's not a photo book of just Sean's big butt.
Butt is not big. Yeah. I have a tiny, tight
not
little
compared
ass.
Compared to the butts in the big butt book.
He doesn't have Hank Hill ass, but no, it's,
but I think the thing
big.
Is true is, like, there's sort of an adapt or die mentality that has to be put to everything. And part of it is, yeah, if you had a time machine and you go back to 2003, any improv star coming out of a whole system anywhere in the country would have opportunities, because you didn't have YouTube yet. You didn't have Instagram yet. And I'm not saying I want Instagram stars or YouTube stars to run everything, but there's a certain amount where, yeah, that's why, I mean, the way you're trying to diversify shows at Unified Scene is, you know, you got to have different types of things, because people aren't coming out for shows in the exact same way that they have been for the last 20 years.
Right.
You need to, you know, like your podcast, for example, like you're bringing different people on. You know, we had, there's a Unified Scene Theater podcast that we did a season of. There's all sorts of videos that people are moving towards that I think in some ways there's so much that's online. People are valuing the in-person experience of going to improv, but there aren't as many opportunities for improv folks. So you just got to do some comedy videos, find some new ways to connect with people.
I like that you're a Christian who goes often to the Mideast and you scream, "Adapt or die." Sounds very crusader, but that's
don't
all
get me started on premillennial dispensationalism. You will lose so many listeners so fast.
Look, both of my listeners are still here. You relax.
If you want to, if you want to talk about Sykes-Picot Treaty, we can get it on, but I don't think no one wants to talk about that except
I don't want to talk about the Piscopo Treaty. What I want to discuss is that UCB, I feel, isn't launching the careers it used to do, but the thing that you could walk away with, feeling you accomplished something in the UCB ecosystem, is like, I am on a weekly show at one of their two stages. Like, right. The amount of shit you have to walk through for that, and the amount of talent you have to possess just to do that is immense.
Right.
And I recently learned that those people get paid absolute zip.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like, if you haven't watched that Showtime series, I'm Dying Up Here, it's so good. Second season now, and they're right at the point where they're talking about the comedian strike, and, you know, the way that they did it back in the day was, you know, it's like a comedy school. You hone your stand-up act, and then you go to TV, and then you do whatever. But, I mean, what's the balance of, like, I don't know what their books look like. Like, I don't know how much they could pay people and still keep a club open.
Right.
Well, I...
And let's also remember that, like, we can also index some of the financial challenges they're having currently to the fact that they signed and again, somebody out there might have better information, a 15-year lease... 15 years for the Hell's Kitchen space, which, and again, I'm getting this both from people who have performed there and from people who have been there. It lacks that sort of character that the initial space has. It's much more expensive, and because it's a bigger theater, and they're also having trouble, you know, filling the shows night in and night out. It's just the beautiful, wonderful thing about UCB and Chelsea was that, you know, it looked and felt, it had this sort of like gritty feel,
this is a dirt shit comedy theater.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not necessarily dirt shit, because they worked their asses off to improve from what it was. But even still, even in Chelsea, there were things that made it feel like an authentic, like weird theater. Like, there's this huge
pillar. The guys blowing each other in the bathroom.
There's this huge pillar, you know, like that sits in the middle of the audience. Yeah. And you know, any other theater where you're paying like a huge ticket price, you'd be like, I'm sitting in front of a pillar. But it's like, you go, I paid $5 for this. This is going to be awesome. Yeah. Right. And the rotation of shows and the people who were really invested in it made sure that, you know, for the most part, you were seeing a quality show. Well, now that it's become more professionalized, and I'm using that word just to talk about how the theater looks and feels and how it's being run, it doesn't seem to have the sort of grit quality, you know, the sort of street cred that it used to have when, you know, kids in their 20s in the mid-aughts were going to it thinking this is the greatest thing they've ever seen. So,
yeah, I mean, how much is it that, you know, you're going up for classes, you know, it's New York City and you live in Virginia. So, I mean, if you lived in New York City, mm-hmm. and you had the opportunity to take advantage of the networking opportunities and then like have lunch with someone the next day or meet up with someone randomly, like, does that affect the way you perceive UCB? Like, what's your main gripe with UCB?
Well, my main gripe, just hearing that, I'll bring up Tim. Your buddy Tim Martin. Right. I saw Tim do a show on Saturday night maybe like a month ago, and the guy killed. And I was like, the talent he put into that, the time he's put into that, he's not getting compensated.
Right.
And UCB's entire model, it's 100% the NCAA model, where it's like,
right, we don't pay the players, but
we don't pay,
but our brand gets elevated, right?
Yes. Yeah. And in theory you might go on to something that pays,
right?
But imagine if, like, college sports, you could just hover in that world forever, and then imagine you didn't even get the scholarship,
right?
Like,
right.
UCB, you fucking pay them,
right.
for this opportunity that, for the most part, like for 99% of the people involved, and I'm not saying that this, we as Americans for some reason believe that like talent and what you become just line up flawlessly, I feel.
Right. I think that, though, if I could jump in, you know, if you're going to see UNC play Kentucky, it's going to be a good game.
Right.
If you go to an improv show, it could be garbage. So the truth is, I disagree with everything the way NCAA runs their sports programs.
Yeah.
From football all the way to highlight.
Absolutely.
Which does not get enough attention.
It doesn't at all.
Outside of the 30s.
But the challenge, too, with improv is that if you're giving students who have taken a few classes an opportunity to perform, that's amazing. I want to go see my friends perform. I want to see that. But in terms of people coming out for shows, if you see any random two college teams play at any division, they're going to be evenly matched. And for the most part, it's going to be a great game. You can't say that about an improv show.
Well, yeah. I think you're comparing, I would say, almost like a peewee player to, like, I'm talking people that have been there like 10 years plus. Like, who, that Connor Ratliff dude.
Yeah.
Just some names I've started to pick up. Shannon O'Neill.
Right.
Like, who are paid in these weird, circuitous ways. Like, I think Connor Ratliff had, like, a bit part as a lawyer on Orange is the New Black.
Right.
And the problem.
Who's the guy on Crashing that the other day we were watching Crashing?
Oh, Zach Cherry.
Zach Cherry, who has performed at the Unified Scene Theater on like two or three occasions.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but a lot of those folks, I mean, I guess the question is not everyone's going to make the money in other stuff, but there are performers that I know at UCB that they're making their money doing voiceover or doing other work. So it's not like they're trying to make a living doing a Saturday night show at UCB.
Yeah. Tim's gotten like a number of commercials. In fact, I was supposed to meet him in November. And he couldn't. He was on the West Coast. He was filming a commercial. So
for the Hardee's turkey burger.
But here's the thing, too. Let's also remember that I think that the improv comedy culture in New York City is kind of over. And what I mean by that is that, like, UCB has moved the Del Close Marathon, which used to be housed entirely in the Chelsea Theater, you know, 3 days straight, nonstop. Which since over the last couple of years has grown to other outlying theaters in the way that other improv and other comedy festivals are run.
And other high life festivals.
Yeah, at other high life festivals. Multi-venue stages and multi-venue courts, right? And now they're saying, nope, we're not going to house it in New York anymore. In fact, we're moving it to L.A. And get this. This came out. I don't know if you saw this either. In order to be in the Del Close Marathon, you have to be a Los Angeles area team. You can't. The model used to be, if you were an improv team from Lincoln, Nebraska, and you had just started, you can apply to the Del Close Marathon. There, you know, you may not get in, but in some cases, you're going to be privileged because you're not a New York area team. Like, you know, that when it first started out, it was like all New York area teams. A lot of teams from Washington would get in. A lot of teams from Philly would get in. From Baltimore,
I know folks from Berlin that used to perform. Exactly,
Berlin. When I was there, the last time I was there, which is obviously about like 7 or 8, 9, 10 years ago, there was a team from Tokyo that came, and they did all improv like silent, and they brought the house down. Right. Well, those opportunities for UCB to act as sort of like a global pinpoint or, you know, stage for improv are gone. Like, it's all going to be LA-based teams. And I think UCB has sort of recognized that their bread and butter is feeding, catering to talent that's sort of somewhat established, bringing up the quality of their shows by making sure that people in the LA region who are trying to make their bones in comedy have a place to play, and also highlighting those teams. So that's another way in which the model has changed. I mean, it's. I don't know that improv has much of a future. Well, I could be wrong. You know, Pitt and Magnet may pick up where UCB is obviously saying we're out of here. But it seems like that almost like the culture has said, okay, we're sort of done with improv. Let's go on to something else.
I think what gets me, Brian, is that we'll use Sean again as an example.
Please do.
Cock and mouth. Sean doesn't blow smoke up people's asses that, like, look, you go through my entire curriculum, look at all my famous grads, and pretty much SNL awaits, which I do for the life of me. I feel UCB kind of goes like,
absolutely.
Look, we're not saying it, but we're saying it. You know, Sean is like, look, do this improv. You'll be a better person. If you want to put together a team and run with that, please do. Here's a performance space. But that's it. Like, the people that bleed for UCB in and out. Like, I was reading again that article. One of the quote-unquote UCB four, Matt Besser, was talking about why they aren't paying the people on stage. And his exact line was, I don't see people that deserve money. I see people having fun out there.
Right.
Because fucking fun and money are not to be intertwined. Like, Taylor Swift is having railroad spikes put through her fucking tootsies every night on stage, and that's why she gets paid. It was really a crock of shit. I mean, I feel they've fed into an entire ecosystem that almost has no payoff. You can say what you want about Tim getting voiceover gigs and shit, and I'm glad the dude's getting paid somehow, or Connor Ratliff getting small parts in, like, Orange is the New Black and stuff, but these are incredibly fucking talented people that you've trained in your means, and for something that's quote-unquote fun, I'm sure as shit they would catch all kinds of hell if they miss a month's worth of their gigs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it suddenly wouldn't be all fun and games.
No, it's true. I think, but, like, it's a combination of, you also have to do the math with the business side.
Absolutely. I mean, I run a fucking business. I get it, but I don't.
But, okay, so what I'm saying is, like, if you have three Heralds a night, you know what I mean? What? It's 18 people. How much are you trying to pay 18 people for a Tuesday night show?
I'm not even saying you have to pay many. For the Tuesday night shit, I really don't care. But if you graduate to their quote-unquote big league, the stuff that they're charging, they're $16 now a ticket. It's $15.50 with the mandatory handling. Like, for that level, for a dude who's been with you a decade, what the fuck are you giving this guy? Like, it all strikes me like another crappy, really top-heavy business that I used to be part of, radio. And I got into radio right when I'm the fucking Grim Reaper. I got into radio right when that was going tits up back in 08. And all they do is sell you guys that want to be the next Howard Stern or the next Don and Mike. They sell you on, like, well, be a fucking board op for a while where you press buttons and shit. Maybe you graduate to producer, but then guess what? Eventually you can be on air, or we're not going to tell you otherwise. But in the meantime, eat these little $8 an hour shit burgers. And you know what? The entire ecosystem for being an on-air talent had died.
Well, but the thing with being an on-air talent, like, no one deserves to be on-air talent. You need to work for it. I mean, I think, you know, not to be all Ayn Rand, invisible hand of the market thing, but there's a certain amount where there are brilliant performers at any improv theater that don't work within a TV show or a podcast or some sort of creative outlet where they're going to make a lot more money. They might be really great to see at an improv show, but they might just, they're not going to transition to film. It's just not in the cards for them. I mean,
I also think there are two things that are happening in the culture that affect what's going on. First of all, there's been a huge shift in the culture generally, not just in comedy, but in creativity and writing and art and performance and music, where people who are the gatekeepers, people who run bars, run performance spaces, are ready to who have platforms, right, are saying, look, just do this for us because you'll get a lot of exposure, right? Mm-hmm. You'll get a lot of exposure. We promise you're going to do. Well, I think what the reaction you're seeing against UCB is the reaction that you see in a lot of spaces, whereby saying, look, I studied graphic design at SCAD, which is one of the, you know, or at RISD, which are two of the best, you know, schools in this country for studying graphic design. I worked my ass off. I got great grades. I got great recommendations. I had to do great work. I can't pay my bills in exposure. Mm-hmm. I can't pay my bills in the promise of money down the road. But the thing of it is, this is the way the culture has transitioned, in that the people who actually hold the cards and can turn those keys are the ones who are sort of like screwing artists and creatives. But this is something I noticed too. You know, biopics or even documentaries on creative people used to focus on the creative people themselves, right? When you went to see a biopic on, you know, for instance, I'll give you, like, you know, there are numerous biographies made of baseball players. Fear Strikes Out on Jimmy Pearson.
How about
Pearson.
Highlight players?
Well, we'll get to that in just a second. That's another fucking tragedy, right? The Babe Ruth story, the Pride of the Yankees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you notice that the biopics or the movies about baseball over the last few decades have focused instead on the owners.
Like Moneyball shit.
Moneyball, the kid who won the Angels, that. like, and then like another that big huge documentary on Dr. Dre, and who's the producer, the guy who
Jimmy Iovine.
There was a fucking 4-hour documentary on Jimmy Iovine, who's a fucking producer,
the guy who turned the switch on Stevie Nicks.
This is the way that, and someone said, you know what you can index to that to is the guys who run rotisserie leagues, the guy who run baseball, fantasy football. Yeah. Fantasy.
I got really excited. I thought you were going to talk about Peruvian chicken for a second.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I was going to do a whole Boston market.
But they're the ones who are spending a lot of money in these spaces. And so content is being catered to those guys, to those people who think about who, you know, and that's sort of a metaphor for the way culture is operating. That we privilege the people who have the platforms and not the people who are doing the actual creating, right? And there are numerous ways in which in music, television, comedy, the people who are the producers get the attention as opposed to the actors who are bringing their talent and their years of studying to bring that talent to the thing.
I think there's – I see your point, but I think that there's definitely – you got to look at both sides. As someone who's been a performer, who's been a musician, I mean, I've only had a few paid gigs playing music, but I still loved playing it. So that's
right.
So in some ways it's like that was my comparison for improv. Improv, you know, I haven't done enough to really get a sense of like, should I be paid or not?
Right.
But if you look at just being on the side of producing, like documentaries or mini docs for nonprofits or whatever, the producers have to orchestrate everything.
Right.
They're the ones who hire the camera person, who hire the talent, who put all these things together, and if it fails, it's 100% on them.
Right.
So, you know, there's a certain amount where they're taking all of the risk, and I think that you have to balance that out. And that's why, like, when people win awards, they're always like, I want to thank the crew, the cast.
Right.
You got to thank everybody from craft services to the dentist who put up the money to make that indie film in the first place. And I don't think that you should move away from the talent to all, you know, to the owners of the theater where the movie's played or whatever. But I think there's a balance of I don't think that improv people, no one's trying to screw anybody by not paying improv performers. I think there's an ecosystem where if people don't like it, I think they will eventually leave, the way that things happened with stand up in the 70s, is that you have to find a balance. Like, do you think that the market won't sort itself out, that people are just going to suffer in silence?
Well, I hate that blind belief in the market, because I do think the market a lot of times can be a piece of shit. But what I'm simply saying this, I feel improv people have an incredibly limited, especially a place like UCB that offers all sorts of like advanced study and things like that. They have an incredibly limited marketplace in which to like ply their trade, if you will. Like, UCB is more than happy to train you out the ass in this stuff, but honestly, what more did you need than the 301, the 401 class? If, like, I'm getting into this specifically because I feel I can take this somewhere, and I don't know if there's many places to take these talents anymore.
I think that if you want to take your talent beyond what's available at UCB, you will do it. I think that it's important, and I don't mean to be overly critical of you, but I think that we can't –
live it up on your one and only performance on the show.
I don't want to look at UCB like it's some sort of children's pageant where they take advantage of parents' money and their dreams for their children. People are buying –
I think they kind of do.
Fake,
like, I like
fake
that
flippers and teeth and $3,000 dresses for a 12-year-old girl. Like, I don't think that improv clubs are doing that. I don't think anyone's being taken advantage of. I think that people go into it.
I think
like, if
UCB
I lived in New
is
York
one of the
City,
few that does.
If I lived in New York City, I would absolutely be taking regular classes at UCB. I absolutely want to be on SNL. I absolutely think I would do a great job. I love wearing wigs, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I want to be on SNL. I want to do that. If that doesn't happen, I'm not going to blame UCB. I mean, that's why I'm in post-production on a pilot show that I wrote. And I put together and I put the money up on. That's why we've worked on podcasts together. That's why I'm shopping a script around for a TV show that I'm trying
but
to
you
produce
represent,
in the West Coast.
I like, would say you represent what is ultimately an existential threat to their model. UCB is old school in the end. And they're like, look, graduate from our clown college and people in this business will notice you. Well,
if there aren't as many circuses anymore, where are clowns going to go? Whose fault is that? The Clown College or Barnum and Bailey?
I
I actually think that Brian is onto something. I think that and I was saying this to somebody about 8 or 9 months ago, and they weren't like, what? There's no way. I think the bubble has kind of sort of burst for improv. I think we can call some of the things we do. Here's what we have to do if we're going to call ourselves improv comedians is find ways to reach an audience that doesn't lean heavily and sit on improv, meaning that we use our improv skills to come up with a cool, fun format for a show.
Yes.
Or that we use our improv skills to come up with a cool, fun series of sketches. But I think that improv, it's kind of, you know, and again, more power to it. Not every genre gets to last forever. There are hundreds of thousands of genres have gone by the board.
Radio all over again.
Yeah.
And like to quote the great Ron Bennington, one of my favorite radio hosts of all time, he's like, this shit was doo-wop.
I just want to point out that he just air quoted great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to read too much into that.
Oh, no. That might have been a nervous twitch. I worship Ron Bennington. Yeah. I think he's a genius.
Right.
Wait, but he's shaking his head no. Do you see that? You see that?
Why do you hate Ron Bennington? Why are you so sardonic and sarcastic?
You pieces of shit. If you sour Ron Bennington on me, I'll have your head.
No, I think that this is one of those sort of trends in the culture that you can do little about except to find ways to.
I just
to,
okay. Yeah. Then let's agree. For the most part, it's a great training, and
absolutely
what Sean does. Like Sean, again, I feel maybe a little too much in the other extreme. I would like if you had more classes, but Sean is kind of like, I've trained you well, baby bird. There's the pavement and there's the sky.
And again, this is where I think that I've said this before, that we differ from UCB, which is this stuff has never been that difficult to me. And I've never felt the necessity to commoditize, to take one aspect of improv, commoditize it and upsell you or anybody else on it. It just never made sense to me.
I would counter with this. Boxing is just punching a dude in the face. That's but you can get trained in that shit for a long time.
That's true. That's true.
And boxing is dying because MMA has taken off. That's an example of you have to adjust to those things. I just think that
teach kicking too, Sean.
I will teach kicking. I want you to hit me with a wiffle ball bat on my legs while I do improv.
Done.
I want to say some people with improv want a little coddling. Some people want to be, you know, pushed like they're training for a fight. You know what I mean? There are different styles of doing that. If there's a way to go through a system, I like a little more coddling. I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. We don't have time to get into all that sort of stuff. But there's a certain amount where...
You're the biggest little spoon I've ever seen.
I know. There's a system. I think people just want to be around that. And it's a great way to be in a class, Magnet, Unified Scene Theater, UCB, Groundlings, whatever, where you can just... You push yourself to be in a place where you're surrounded by people. I have to set up systems for myself so I can succeed. I end up doing a lot of stuff on my own. I don't like sitting in a room on a laptop with Final Draft writing pilot scripts. But that's what I have to do because those are the opportunities right now. I would rather be in a system that has up to, you know, 101, 201, 301, and then be on systems. But that's not always a possibility.
Yeah, I think Brian is hitting on something, too, that... may have been prevalent at UCB and in other spaces. I don't want to isolate UCB for a long time, not for a long time, for the last couple of years or so. I think that maybe we've all been talking around this, and maybe it's already been articulated. So I'm sorry, but you know, you have to sort of have the initiative, even if you are in the UCB ecosystem, mm-hmm. meaning that you can't. There's no guarantee, and I think this is the thing that a lot of people in this town are bumping up against, the guarantee that, look, I took all the classes, I took level 4, level 5, level 6, how come I didn't get on the Herald team? Well, there are myriad reasons for that, right? Mm-hmm. And it may have something to do with your talent, something to do with your experience, something to do with your personality. But I think the expectation that just because you have been at UCB for a while or that you've gone through their system means that that's automatically a next step into whatever upper echelons of comedy that you're ambitious for. It's just I think people might be reacting to that look, I was guaranteed a plate of goods at the end of this and it's not there. Where the hell is it?
I mean, it's like college in many ways. Like, okay, great, you have an accounting degree. okay, you have an accounting degree. Now go get a job. Like, they're not guaranteeing you a job as
I guess
an accountant.
A lot of this is bleeding into, A, the decentralization of everything through the internet, and B, just the economy as a whole, the world economy, right, kind of eating shit the last 40 years.
Right.
The people that wanted to do entertainment in the 70s and 80s, and God knows prior to that, it wasn't as hard. Were the hoops you had to jump through initially a little rougher than, like, we grab a mic and we have a podcast? Fuck yeah.
Right.
But there was just this track that you walked through, and yeah, like, you could be an entertainment after this. It simply wasn't
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone was a stand-up comedy in the 80s. Stand-up comedian in the 80s. In the 80s, everyone. Some really...
Tell us more, Papa
not
Sean.
Very talented people were stand-up comedians. Well, and this is another aspect, too, that I think has affected comedy culture
you
as well.
You and your war on Paul Reiser.
Look, he didn't deserve the career he had. No, that's not true.
It's a lady.
That's right. So we've also become a more visual culture now, right? Like, you can't just be in the old. Back in the 70s and 80s, you could be fucking ugly as hell,
yeah,
and still have a comedy career.
I've seen Toto.
Be so aesthetically unpleasing that people that you could endless Rodney Dangerfield jokes about putting meat around your neck to get the dog to play with you, yeah, would have applied, right? In this day and age, you can't just be funny. You have to be good looking.
Yeah, that's...
The number of...
Then why have I failed?
Exactly.
Papa Giorgio's pointing to UK on a map.
The number of stand-up comedians I see these days who are extraordinarily talented, but who are also extraordinarily good-looking,
uh-huh, well,
is compared to the it looked like a union carbide meeting in the 70s. It was just awful. I mean, people weren't just that good looking, but these days you have to be both.
But that's the same thing. It's like, okay, I'll use Nikki Glaser as an example.
I would glaze her.
You wonder why you don't have it.
Yeah. She's someone who is, yeah, she's very attractive,
right?
She's also really, really funny.
Right.
She works really, really hard. She's had a bunch of great different shows you've never heard of that have failed, but she's also very active adjusting to the times. She's very active on social media, Instagram stories, all these type of things that people find exhausting, because the traditional ways to be a performer and make a living in entertainment are not there in the way that they were in the past. So she's someone who has adjusted. She's incredibly funny, but she also is aware of her look. She, you know, exercises a lot, I think tans or whatever. She had a whole Instagram story for months and months about, you know, getting what are those dentures that you put in, that you buy on the internet?
Dentures.
Then, yeah, or not dentures. What are those?
Teeth whitening?
Teeth whitening slash correcting your smile.
Right.
I don't really know.
Invisalign.
Invisalign. Yeah, those sort of things. So
who's the NBA player who touts that too?
Karl Malone.
Yeah.
No.
The
mailman.
A power forward, though.
Yeah, those type of things. Like, she's
it's new.
She's good looking, and she works really, really hard. I mean, those are the type of things where, like, okay, are you gonna blame Taylor Swift for being a talented songwriter and a musician and also attractive?
Well, was the end of the episode, Dick. All right.
No, you know what I mean? Like, I think it comes down to, like, I mean, not to get all, like, existential and whatever, but a lot of it comes down to, like, what are the things that you can do to make you happy? It makes me happy to make comedy videos. It makes me happy to be engaged in a community where people are trying to have fun, build community, and create. So there's a certain amount where if people don't – listen, if you're not having fun playing Hi Li,
yeah,
don't do it. I'm not saying that you should perform Hi Li for free forever. But there's a balance, like, what do you – I mean, we're not going to do government subsidies for improv theaters. Like, you know what I mean?
How about,
like,
the highlight players?
The highlights, I still think, yes. A bill made it to the floor in the House.
Right.
It couldn't come out of committee in the Senate.
And there we go again. There we
right?
are.
Right? I mean, we did all that we could on that campaign. I spent about $35,000 of my own money.
Yeah.
I also made that money myself in my basement, but still, it was my money. But what I'm saying is – you know, have fun, work hard, and you can't, you know, I can't derive my happiness whether Lauren Michaels returns my phone calls or not. So he blocked my cell phone. What am I going to do? I still send him postcards. I still send him handwritten letters. candy grams. You do what you want.
All right, look. So I need to be beautiful. What I'm going to do is take my brain and put it in another body like Krang from Ninja Turtles.
No, you need to love yourself as you are. You need to be in the moment. Enjoy whatever you're doing, because I really feel like anytime you talk to someone who's happy, who didn't do a lot of drugs and die in comedy, but is actually working hard, is they're around people they love, they're working hard, and they're trying to find a work-life balance that's sustainable. And that's part of why
I'm
like
0 for 3.
No, it's part of like improv versus comedy, like stand-up. I love doing stand-up. I feel like I'm getting better, but a lot of the stand-ups I know, like a lot of them are great people, but a lot of them I just hear them constantly talk crap about other people, as opposed to the improv scene where people, it's a yes and culture, and people, you know, I got your back, and that's why I choose to spend more time with those type of people working on video projects or doing the improv stuff or like the radio play stuff that we want to do more of at Unified. I don't want to be a solitary stand-up crushing it in Omaha, you know, staying at, you know, a Holiday Inn by myself.
You don't
want to
fuck a waitress at the Chuckle Hut?
No, I don't think that will make me happy long term.
Okay.
For some people, maybe that makes them happy, but I don't, I mean, I want to be around people who are positive, who are creating.
She's a D-cup.
Again, why is he using unnecessary air quotes?
I don't know. I don't understand.
Around the she.
That's right.
All right.
It's noon.
Oh, we have to wrap
up.
We have to wrap shit up.
This is my lunch break. I have to go back to work.
Oh, fuck that. I have to go to my lock supply shop to buy a tool, and then my day is done.
Why did you air quote tool?
And then point to my jaw as I unhinged it. All right. Well,
I feel a lot better.
This has been a cathartic conversation.
You know, I have a couple questions. For people who want to learn more about Unified Scene Theory, I don't mean to be your number one advocate and social media cheerleader, but where can people find you?
That's a fantastic segue. Let me tell you this, Brian. you could find us on unifiedscenetheater.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at UnifiedSceneDC. And that's where you can find most of the information. So,
if you want to see pictures of my cat, predominantly and primarily, Instagram BP Dust. If you want to hear me rail about politics, occasional photos of my cat, but mainly politics, a lot of articles about Jesus, you can follow me on Twitter, also BP Dust.
I'm at Papa's Basement on Twitter. And I'll have to be more active under that same handle on Instagram as well.
Why is he air quoting basement?
I don't know. I don't know.
Find the podcast on iTunes, air quote, and Stitcher, double air quotes, and you'll enjoy it, triple air quotes.
You know, I got to ask a question. Seeing that this isn't live radio and this is a podcast that someone's listening to, haven't they already found the podcast?
They have.
Yes.
I don't know why. It's my radio background. I'm like, if you're just tuning in, it's like no one's just fucking tuning in. All right.
Should we take some calls?
I see the board lighting.
It's really bad. I hate that I have that in me.
Does he like that he has friends that mock him mercilessly? Just so folks know, when the recorder's turned off, we're not going to stop mocking him.
That's right.
No. Be like, look at that little acorn dick. Just peeking through your fat boy jeans. Well, guys, that was the latest episode of Straight White Men Talk About Shit. hope you liked it. And, yeah, we're leaning toward YouTube content in the future.
Yes, we are.
YouTube.com/Papa's Basement.
You know what people love to watch on YouTube? Hi-Li.